FW presents Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history. Each episode, I'm Siskoid, and our panelist today is Amélie Montour from Oh Hot Moo or Not. Hi, Amélie.
Hi.
You're trying to be on as many podcasts as possible. Tell us about your quest.
I am.
Because this is why you answered the call.
I'm not sure how this started. It's all Mike's fault. I mean, Siskoid. I don't know. We started with the improv podcast that we do, Category Lib, I think. And then I got into Oh Hot Moo kind of randomly. I was coming over one night to hang out with Nat, I think. And she was like, we're doing a podcast about superheroes if you want to come. I wasn't really formally invited to that, but I came. And I stuck, and now I'm part of the Oh Hot Moo Girls. Yeah, I don't know. We just started getting into different podcasts. I think I started doing voices for the
Lonely Hearts
romance comedy theater because I have a very sensual secretary voice. That's not because of that. I mean, confirm, maybe. I've been running an event this weekend, so my voice it's even lower than usual. But yeah, I don't know. We just started going from show to show, and then Mike would let me know when shows would be available to have a spot for a voice here and there. And I don't know. It just became a thing, and now I'm at 11.
11. Does this count this one?
Yeah, this is 11. So if anybody else wants me to be on there.
You did like 2 lines for Hero Points, and you crashed a party on Invasion. And,
yeah.
And you've also done shows that are not on the network as well.
Yeah.
And some that have not been released yet.
Ah!
You're the voice of a beautiful dreamer on the Done in One Wonders. Yeah, what else? You've got a list there.
I've got, all right. We've got First Strikes. We've got FW Presents, Lonely Hearts, Oh Hot Moo. Give me that Star Trek where we did a cooking episode.
Mm-hmm.
Done in One Wonder podcast, Wonder Show. Category Lib, which is the improv one. FW Team Up, Hero Points, Panel by Panel. And then another one that isn't released yet.
To come. All right, well, in this case, you know, Panel by Panel is basically talking about a single panel, the unit of comic bookness.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm excited.
Sequential art. Here's our randomized series of choices using my database of available comic book materials, either physical or digital. Prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands, that month, a page, and finally a panel. In this case, we rolled the year 2002, the month of February. Among all the comics out that month, The Revolving Finger falls on Stray Bullets number 23 by David Lapham, page 24 of 28, and panel 6 of 8, which you'll find in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Now, I don't expect you to have read any Stray Bullets.
No.
But are you, in fact, Stray Bullets is a anthology series. Some characters return back, you know, come back or are sort of in the background.
Okay.
It's in the same universe, but it is a crime anthology, basically.
Oh.
A modern crime anthology.
Oh, well, that's what I'm all about.
But are you, in fact, a fan of the crime narrative?
I'm a huge true crime fan.
True crime?
Yeah.
Oh. Specifically?
Yes. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. They're kind of my favorite pastime, I guess. Mm-hmm. I really love sitting in my car doing the commute with true crime podcasts.
So if true crime podcasters listening to this...
Oh, yeah, I want to be on those.
She wants to be on those. She can do a voice. She can do like a reenactment.
Yeah, I've never been on a true crime podcast, and they're my favorite. So, I mean, other than...
No, not other. Probably not other. They are your favorite.
Yeah, I really, really like those. Yeah.
What is it about crime? Because you're not a criminal or,
no.
an officer of the law.
No, I don't know. I just...
Or is it the history? Because you are a history major.
I don't know what attracts me about them. And I think it's slowly because I started getting into horror and creepier things, I guess. Mm-hmm. I used to be a real big scaredy cat. And I loved hearing the stories from scary movies and whatnot, but I was too afraid to watch the movies themselves. So I like just hearing the stories from people, and I guess that's exactly what true crime podcasts are. So there's all that suspense, and it's just drawn out of just someone, of just watching a movie.
Mm.
So I do like true crime movies as well, but I think the podcasts are more drawn out and go really deeply into different sections, really into detail, if they're done correctly. Because if they're a little bit everywhere on a timeline, I'm very visual and I will get lost really, really easily. I don't know. I just love it. And I love me some good, gruesome,
podcast. You sort of treat it as a thriller, like a real life thriller.
Yeah.
What do you think of fictional thrillers or fictional crime stories?
I actually listened to a fictional true crime podcast.
Fictional true crime?
Well, no. Okay. I guess it was a story told by a criminal.
Okay.
Kind of that perspective. But I realized through the telling that the announcements during the podcast that it wasn't true.
Okay.
And I was really disappointed. And
so they just used the format.
To
a bit like, what is that Netflix pseudo-documentary series, Drawing Dicks on the Cars American Vandal,
yeah.
Which is used a true crime format to tell a fictional story.
Yeah, it was basically a very Sweeney Todd story about people putting people in empanadas. it was interesting, and I finished it because I don't like just dropping something. But I like the trueness of it, and I don't know why, but I'm not afraid of serial killers as much as I am the supernatural. So it's something that I can listen to, although it is something that is more likely to happen to me than, I don't know.
Well, murder is more likely than vampires or, you know. More likely.
Depends who you're talking to.
I guess. So in this case, it's not a true crime comic.
Okay.
Each issue did tell a full crime story.
I did read Death Note, which is kind of that.
Is it?
Yeah.
With a supernatural twist.
But there's a killer and there's investigators and trying to find who is killing everyone with a Death Note book.
All right. Well, let's look at the panel.
Yes.
I'll describe it because I sort of sprung this on you kind of last minute, so I'm not expecting you to do long descriptions, but here's the panel if you can't see it. In stark black and white, light and shadow, two characters, their eyes wide open, have their heads together, ever so slightly touching. One is presumably a boy with short hair, the other a woman with long hair, mascara, and long fingernails, as we can see from the two fingers popping out of her hair. Her head is resting on that hand. They are in a dark place, and we only see a sliver of maybe a third of the panel, as revealed by a flashlight that one of the characters has just turned on. We see their thumb on the button, a sound effect click, followed by two suspenseful dashes, as if there's something more to it. Barely illuminated are the foreground elements, that hand, the flashlight itself, the woman's arm in baggy clothing. In bright light, we have the boy's eye actually crossing the line where the shadow begins, as if the eyes have a light of their own. Mm-hmm. He's looking at the other person, worried. His mouth is not visible, neither is the woman's, hidden by her arm. She has a blank stare. Lapham has not drawn her irises, so her pupils are just pinpricks in a white void. Her mascara is running, or rather has run, because it's going down her cheeks, and not across the bridge of her nose as gravity would dictate. In the center of her forehead is a spidery splash of black, like a wound. What have I missed?
No, I think that's pretty accurate.
It's a very small panel. On the comic, it's it's like two postage stamps almost. But here, I've blown it up for you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I have very bad eyes, so I'm glad. There's a lot of distress here. Yeah, I do think that is an injury on her forehead. I hadn't really noticed that. Either clumsy or there's danger.
What about the mood? This is a very moody piece just because of the... Are you a fan of the black and white?
Yeah.
Or do you think comics should be colorful?
I'm okay with black and white. Death Note was in black and white.
Yeah, a lot of manga is in black and white.
Yeah.
And there was sort of a black and white renaissance sort of in this period.
Okay.
Where they, crime comics could be done in black and white, stark black and white, because film noir on the page.
I'm all about that. Yeah. I love black. It's one of my favorite colors, tints, whatever.
Is it a tint?
Shade.
Because if we expand the context, what if I were to tell you that the woman is indeed dead?
Oh, yeah. Oh, so that's some, end up in a coffin, open your eyes kind of situation. Okay, cool. Oh, that's interesting.
What if I were to tell you that they were in the trunk of a car?
I don't know. I haven't been around a lot of dead bodies. I don't know how I'd react.
But you wake up in the trunk of a car, and there is a dead body there with you.
I don't know what I'd do. I like to burrow when I'm afraid, so I'd probably try to sadly hide under it. Yeah. You don't want to scream, because you don't know who's around if they're close. I'd probably try to get out, try to find a way. There's usually a latch somewhere, I think, all depending on the year of the car. Maybe? He has a flashlight, so he's not bound or anything. Which That's is true. A little strange. Did he get himself in, maybe? Because, I don't know, usually you're bound when you're put in a trunk, right? That's standard.
Isn't the trunk enough of a bond? I mean, you'd be trapped in a trunk. Where else can you go?
Well, I think there's a latch sometimes, like I said. There's like an emergency. So all depending on how new the car is. Mm. Maybe it's old enough.
Newer
there
cars
isn't that.
Have this fail-safe where, you know, a Quentin Tarantino movie can't happen to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's the other question. So he turns on the light. He sees this. It's kind of a freaky moment. So lights on or lights off? Let's say you're trapped in this trunk. The car is moving.
Good.
You're with this dead body, fresh dead body. Do you want to... You want the light on or the light off? What is...
I don't know.
What's the best?
I don't... I mean,
you've listened to a lot of true crime.
Yeah.
Presumably, this sort of thing happens all the time.
Happens all the time. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like...
What if you know the dead person?
Oh, that's sad. Light off. You don't want to see them like that, but then you're feeling around for a latch.
Did you originally, you didn't, that this was a dead person?
No, I hadn't realized that.
So what's the story?
Yeah, no.
If she's not dead.
I'm intrigued.
I have kept the context from
you. Yeah, I was picturing like some, like under the bed, she's in distress, and he looks worried more, because his eyes aren't as completely open, so he seems more like he's ready to, not pounce, but kind of... move into action to get them out of the situation.
Because I said that was her arm, but it could have been like a blanket or a pillow. Or I tried to look at the panel, obviously. I had to open the book.
Yeah.
But I tried to look at the panel just as itself, like not let my eyes roam, and only did so later. And at first, and I didn't see the bullet wound either. So I thought, oh, okay, are they like telling spooky stories?
Yeah,
or,
I thought that too.
You know, it's a sleepover or something. And they're believing in their own fears and, you know, their expression.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have experience with? I guess they're called campfire stories.
Yeah, I'm afraid of the dark. So I used to have sleepovers with friends that would tell me scary stories that are now lifelong traumas.
You have phobias that are, you know, those irrational fears that only come from drama, basically.
No, I had a friend who told me a story about a doll that would come and, I guess, cut off your fingers while you're sleeping.
Was that what you're afraid of, dolls?
Yeah.
That story?
Yeah.
Finger-cutting dolls?
Yeah. It was the four-fingered doll, and she'd, like, come at night and cut off one of your fingers. Take it, because she only had four. But it's some, like, she's in a closet in a box, and she gets out of there kind of stuff. Because I have a recurring... No, it's not recurring. It's always different, but I have a doll nightmare every so-and-so. Because I'm so afraid. And they're always different, but it's always that they're animated and cannot be destroyed. Because they're inanimate, right? So they don't have a heart or anything that can be cut off from the life source. So that's what terrifies me. So I have dreams that I, like, can't get rid of them. They're undestroyable. They're everywhere. They're multiplying.
My God.
And they're all carrying knives.
Because I always find this, like, rather strange. You know, it's interesting because I don't have that.
Okay.
I mean, I have nightmares. I have very vivid, strange dreams. Yeah. All of that. Sure. But I don't have phobias. They don't carry over. Nothing. I watch horror films and I'm like, I enjoy this intellectually.
Yeah.
But I don't have... You know, it doesn't create fears for me. It's not like Come Out of It Follows and if somebody's in the street behind me, I'm freaking out. I know it's happened to people.
I mean, I'll be on my nerves when I come out of something like that.
We have one of the Hohatmu girls became deathly afraid of statues after seeing Doctor Who Blink.
Yeah.
The Weeping Angels.
Yeah.
And just watching that gave her an extra phobia. So, So to me, fiction is fiction. And
No, I don't know. I don't know what creates that it loops in my mind. And because, I don't know, you'd think it would always be the same, but it's different. Sometimes it's mannequins. Sometimes it's Cabbage Patch Kids with paper bags on their heads chasing me with knives. It's absurd. It makes no sense whatsoever because the only coherent thing is the dolls, but they're all in different formats. So it's really deep-rooted, I think.
I mean, you've started going to horror films more, and I know you don't enjoy, like, the jump scare stuff.
No, not a fan.
Neither do I.
That's a trauma, too.
To me, it's cheap, but it's just, like, surprising. It's not fear, it's surprise. Anyway, but... See what I mean? I'm just intellectualizing the whole thing.
Yeah.
But doll films.
Oh,
that
no,
would be no.
Absolutely not. There's one coming out soon.
Annabelle and all of that stuff.
Oh, frig that.
No. Yeah, there's one with a dummy, like a ventriloquist dummy or something.
Yeah, no, it's like a doll and it's buried in the backyard and they take it out and its eyes move. And...
What about Toy Story? Is Toy Story okay?
The last one, no.
Oh, that's right.
Actually.
The last one had creepy dolls.
Terrifying ventriloquist dummies. I remember seeing, I think it was the intro for Goosebumps. When it used to play on TV in the 2000s, and there was a bit where there's a ventriloquist dummy, and that scared me too, so I would always flip the channel.
Now, if you were to reenact this panel, mm-hmm. But not the dead one, not the dead version, but the version where we're, you know, the flashlight and yeah. the covers and telling a spooky story and getting this atmosphere in your own space, would you tell a doll story? You know, what would you tell people as a scary story, or do you risk scaring yourself with your own?
I'm actually a lot better with that now. I like to tell more gruesome ones, I think. I'm not very good with storytelling myself. I'm not good with details or timing. but I think when there's more of like a visual aspect to it, I can get into it a little bit more. And that helps with my storytelling. But I don't know. This feels like what they are saying in the panel is they're telling a story and then they hear a sound is what I saw.
The click.
Yeah. Yeah. They're telling the story of the, what is it? The story with the hook.
The guy with the hook.
The guy with the hook. And then you hear a hook, you know, yeah. kind of that.
Yeah. You hear the hook scraping against yeah. the car.
I visited a house this week because we're house shopping, my boyfriend and I.
Right.
And
a haunted house.
There. No, but the master bedroom had a door that went up to the attic.
Those little doors, those tiny doors?
No, it was a
full
big door.
Oh, okay.
Full door, full stairs.
So anytime whoever's in the attic could just walk into your room.
Yeah, because there is someone in the attic, obviously. And my boyfriend was like, oh, imagine you're sleeping and you hear steps. I was like, no, I gagged.
Or just the cracking. You know, the house cracks.
Yeah, and you wake up and the door's slightly open. No, thank you. No, thank you. So
you pass on that house.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were other reasons.
Yeah, I mean, surely, but...
But you've worked in an actual haunted house
yeah.
that's open every year.
Yeah.
You know a little something about what would make you freak out in the house.
Yes. Mostly, honestly, the quiet is the most terrifying thing. Because people are afraid of what will happen more than what is happening. I was a character 1 year where I just stood there and opened a door. And they were all like, why is she looking at me? Why is she looking at me? Stop. I'm just standing there.
Yeah, it reminds me. We went to a haunted house in Prince Edward Island together a few years ago.
Yeah, and I cried.
And I'm not scared. And you're supposed to be used to it. Anyway, so...
When you're in it, it's not the
but
same.
But there is a bifurcation in hallways where you go. So there's like, you follow the path and it brings you to a room, but there's also another access to that same room.
Mm-hmm.
When you all went right, I went left. So basically, I showed up in your field of vision, you know, a bit further up. Well, of course, I mean, he screamed.
So. Ever since that trip, I do not trust Mike in haunted houses
Well, I'm
anymore.
The guy that in the stairway, I'm going to grab your ankles and I'm going to do stuff because I...
Yeah, Marty from Lonely Hearts
Marty's
2.
Bad.
He's bad. He's like, oh, come over here. Come on, we're all over here. And there's something popping out of the wall.
Yeah, we tried to actually later on in that house, we tried to surprise the girls at other points, like hiding and...
But yeah, I did not trust you guys anymore at that point. You're a...
What?
Non-believer exorcist.
Yeah, that's right. I don't believe in the supernatural.
And it makes it go away.
I'm safe.
Yeah.
I'm safe. As we've actually discussed on this show before, because we did an episode in St. Andrews with Chag and Bass and Shotgun. And we talked about my exorcism days.
Yeah. Some good stuff. So if I did buy a house... You know, with people in the attic. Yeah.
Charge your mind. All right. Well, thank you, Amélie. Let's tell people where they can find you. You heard the list, but if they want to interact with you on the internet.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at UltravioletMontour, and I'm also on Twitter at Mélie Ultraviolet. M-E-L-I, Ultraviolet. Whereas, honestly, where I interact the most with the podcast peeps.
Podcast peeps.
Podcast peeps. From FW and all that.
All right. I'll let you go back to the margins. You need to go home after this long weekend of leadership activity.
I'm so tired.
And we'll listen to a short promo. I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode.
Perfect.
So which is the hottest Marvel character?
Iron Man.
Ant-Man. I can't decide between Professor X and Magneto, so both.
Loki.
Is Wolverine Marvel?
What about White Tiger?
What about White Tiger?
Doc Samson.
Who's he?
Star Fox.
That's a video game.
The girls go on a journey to determine every Marvel character's hotness in Ohotmu or Not, the official handbook of the Marvel Universe podcast you didn't know you wanted. Available on iTunes and at fireandwaterpodcast.com.
Let's look at our previous episode of Panel by Panel, Comment by Comment. This one was entitled, Hey Kids, SF Magazines, looked at a panel from Our Fighting Forces, number 153, by Jack Kirby. My guest was Rob Kelly. Your comments. Chris Franklin says, fun show. Rob is going for some kind of Guinness record for most appearances on a podcast network. He can do that just on his shows alone. When I first glanced at this panel and read, makes this war look puny, I thought Kirby was throwing shade at Sergeant Rock, too. The Rock title is weird, but Kirby doing war comics is, of course, nothing new, as you guys pointed out, and Kirby actually saw combat, unlike many comics artists who, while they served during the war, used their comic skills on magazines, literature posters, films, etc. for the war effort. So he's got more street cred than a lot of other folks who did war comics. I always think of that cover for Foxhole Comics showing a bandaged one-eyed soldier looking off in the distance as he's drawing the chaos around him. So maybe Kirby volunteered for a low-selling war title, like Losers, or maybe Carmine Infantino said, hey Jack, you know war comics? Fix this one. Who knows? Well, John Morrow and Mark Evanier probably do, but now here Chris refers to a Rock comic. One of the magazines had like the word Rock on it, and we couldn't quite make out what it would be. We were sort of stupid. We sort of realized later it was Rocket Travel. That's what the magazine was. So obvious. Brian Linton says, thanks for another excellent episode, gentlemen. My own experience with war comics is reading an issue or two of The Nom back in the late 80s. So it was great to learn more about this quirky little war comic. As soon as you pointed out that Johnny is thumbing through a pulp magazine, my mind also jumped to Rocket Travel. Where were you, Brian, when we needed you? As a possibility for the cover text. Also, I did a quick search of the story titles mentioned in the panel and found only one match, but it was so appropriate that I had to mention it here. According to Memory Alpha, Invaders from the Ninth Dimension is the title of one of Tom Paris's holoprograms, which appears in the Voyager episode Homestead. Sorry, I couldn't resist crossing the streams. Martin Gray says, top episode. It's especially interesting to hear Rob's informed thoughts on what inkers, especially Mike Royer, brought to Kirby. My favorite Kirby inkers are Vince Coletta, especially on Thor, because he made things look so slick. Well done, that eraser. And Joe Sinnott for the lovely cleanliness. That isn't to say I don't enjoy the blocker 70s work under Royer. The power is undeniable. I guess I prefer my Jack tamed. I do think there is some of that blocky Jack Kirby look on some of Vince Coletta's work as well, especially in the early Fourth World series. Jack Bond says, I wonder if Kirby himself didn't live through getting razzed for his sci-fi interest while in the army. After the war, the field entered a time of more respect because of the rocket and, of course, the bomb. There is even a story in fandom that a science fiction magazine was investigated during the war for publishing a story about the atom bomb, but the editor pointed out stories about it in older issues and even convinced the agents that he should continue to publish stories about atomic warfare, as a sudden silence might alert any enemies who were monitoring our pulp fiction. I found online the New York Times 1971 obituary of editor John W. Campbell that refers to this story as if it were known to the public. I searched through all my brother's old books about Star Trek to find this again. A letter James Blish published in the sixth volume of Adaptations in 1972. In Vietnam, the army company of Captain Pierre D. Kirk adopted organization and radio call signs based on the show. During an armed convoy run, they came under sniper attack. The captain organized a response over the radio, culminating in the order, phaser banks, charge your phasers and fire on my order, at which point the sniping ceased. Thank you, Jack, for that other bit of crossing streams between my shows. Just enough time to remind you that we are on Patreon, that is to say the Fire and Water Podcast Network. If you like this content and want more, please think about leaving a one-time or a monthly donation on Patreon. That's at patreon.com/FW podcasts. You can also unlock rewards on there. As ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line. We'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly, and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Amélie Montour from Oh Hot Book or Not. And until we refill that seat, the panel is open.